We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
On today's episode of BuzzBeat, we get into the Hornets' win over Sacramento, share our thoughts on the upcoming West Coast road trip, and answer some listener questions concerning the future of this Charlotte Hornets team. All that up next.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ. Oh, my goodness! Stunning with the left hand! Devontae.
All right, everyone. Welcome in to another Buzz Beat. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by Brian today. Spencer is out because recently he got his wisdom teeth taken out, Brian. It feels like most people that do that, that usually comes in high school or maybe college, and not to age Spencer here, but he's definitely some years removed from high school. BG, have you had your wisdom teeth taken out, or are you one of the rare ones that didn't have to?
No, I had my wisdom teeth pulled out in high school. It was during the summertime though, but it was right around when my high school, like we had the basketball camp at Mount Tabor. And I remember trying, you couldn't play for like a day after that. But then the next day I tried to play and I shouldn't have done that. I was like still like a space cadet at practice or at camp. And I remember one of our coaches coming over to me and saying, "Hey, Brian, why don't you just go sit over on the bleachers here for the rest of the tonight's events here." So, that certainly takes me back to think about that. But yes, I've had them out. Okay. I've had, I think, basically any kind of like oral surgery that you can have. Like, I've probably had it at some point.
Yeah, it's just odd to me that Spencer's doing it now. Like, I wonder, like, maybe they were okay when he was in high school and college, and all of a sudden, maybe it's affecting him, I guess, at this point. But
yeah, the earlier you get them out, generally the better, right? Before they become impacted. But I was talking to a friend a couple months ago, and she was describing that it was like she in high school went in to get her 4 wisdom teeth yanked out. They could only take 2 of them out. And so she came out of anesthesia with them saying, "Yeah, we could only get 2 of these teeth out. And now the other 2 are causing her a great deal of discomfort." So just get them out whenever you can, I guess, is the lesson to be learned there.
But I texted you guys. I also have a vivid memory of this. It was like I was being catered to. It was in high school at some point. It might have been over summer like you, where my parents wanted to do it, where it wasn't affecting school that much. But I just remember drinking smoothies all day and playing NBA Street 2 and just, you know, laid out on a recliner being catered to. It actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be in terms of just like the after effects. If anyone is going to have anything go wrong in my family, it's always my brother. Like my parents would always tell me he would always get ear infections and it would always be something that went wrong as a complication. So when he got his wisdom teeth taken out, he was on medicine, pain medicine a little bit longer than I was. And it always happens with him. So I'm very fortunate with that.
Honestly, sitting on the couch playing video games sounds pretty nice, honestly, at this point right now. Yeah.
My video gaming has gone downhill over the years. And now that I have a 2-year-old, it's pretty much out the window. I do have a system sitting over there, but It doesn't get used much. Okay, let's get into the Charlotte Hornets and their win against the Kings. This marked the fourth straight win for this Charlotte team and now has them sixth overall, or tied for fifth if you want to consider it that way as well, in the East, at a record of 20-18. It's crazy to think that this late in the season, if you want to call it late in the season, that this team is two games over 500. But, you know, watching the game, Brian, it definitely wasn't a pretty win by any means for Charlotte. And one of the biggest reasons, again, this is something that we've talked about in the past, is perimeter defense was definitely lacking. And I know that you have to give credit to De'Aaron Fox. Like, he's just such a quick lightning bug type of player that can just get you off your balance, and he can get into the teeth of the defense pretty easily. It's hard to stay in front of him. And, you know, but again, this just highlights the need for this team to have perimeter defenders in the biggest way. In Sacramento, in the first quarter, I made a note of this, had 12 made baskets within 4 feet of the hoop. That's 1 a minute, Brian, 1 a minute. Yeah. At that point, really, there was no need for that team to start taking shots from deep. But having said all that, you know, one player that kind of stepped up out of necessity was Cody Martin. In games like this, you need a player like him. And yes, it might be a very situational type of thing, but he had several nice one-on-one possessions on defense, including one late in the third quarter against De'Aaron Fox. So, Brian, obviously they won the game, and they need to win some ugly games like this if they're going to contend and stay in that 6th, 7th, 8th spot. But, man, it still highlights some of the deficiencies this team has on the defensive side of the court.
Yeah, like they're going to be that way on that side of the court all season. It's pretty obvious. And I think the hope is that while this is not an elite offense, I do think last night was like a blueprint of sorts for them to like win ugly. Like, you can have some games like you do, like the Hornets did Saturday night against Toronto, where they just, this team shoots a lot of above the break threes and they force turnovers. And because of those two things, like, every couple of games or every, you know, once every 2 weeks worth of games or a week and a half or whatever, like they can have one of those explosive games where just like they get rocking and rolling and it's really fun. Now, we know that's not like a baseline level for them, nor is it really for most basketball teams. And last night was one of those games where you're just like, I know there's no real perimeter stoppers on this team. You know, Malik Monk and Cody Martin specifically, I think, have their moments where they can be good point of attack defenders. We know how like Miles and LaMelo to a lesser extent can like make an impact as team defenders and help defenders. And I think we saw there are several good examples of that with Miles again last night. Mm-hmm. But there aren't many stoppers on this roster. They play backcourts that are smaller. They play smaller. Their best rim protector is a 6'7" guy, like Miles. They just don't have any of the components to really stop that. And they're also like geared towards trying to force turnovers and take gambles, and that's going to leave you exposed for stuff too. But their like win ugly formula is like keep things close. And at the end of the game, try to let your guards, your playmakers take over. They're probably getting a fair amount of shooting luck, and we can talk about the clutch numbers if we want. Like, they are far and away the best clutch offense in the league so far. They're shooting above 53% on clutch threes this season after shooting well above 40% a season ago. So there's likely to be some regression, but yeah, the hope is that just like because on offense, you're taking enough threes and enough shots at the rim, the math is going okay for you in that direction, in that as long as you force some turnovers at the other end, you know, maybe you can just keep things close. And then when you do force those turnovers, you're just really efficient in transition, which they've been so far this year. So until they really, like, there's no way, I don't think there's a way for you to like scheme this defense better. Mm-hmm. I thought Rozier had a couple really bad defense possessions last night, including one trying to like chase Fox around a screen that was bad. And then there was another like one-on-one play with maybe it was Barnes. I'd have to check my notes, but you know, Terry's out there to gun and shoot threes. So they're limited in terms of personnel at every line of the court defensively, with an exception here or there, but it is not enough. The fact that this team is like 17th in defense, despite the fact that they give up this many looks at the rim and this many corner threes, is like kind of a miracle, honestly.
You look up and down the stat line of this game, and almost every single one favors the Sacramento Kings. And you look back on it and you're just like, how did Charlotte win another game against Sacramento late? And, you know, two miracles in a row. You talk about the clutch shooting numbers and just the clutch play overall. You know, when this team gets down towards the end of the game, they have players that are fearless. They have players that are going to step up, and they aren't afraid to take a shot when they need to. And obviously, Terry Rozier is a big role, a big player in that clutch shooting, but also Devontae Graham as well. He hit one late in the fourth quarter. It was a catch and shoot three to cut the lead to 110-108. And Devontae Graham, you know, embracing his new role coming off the bench. It's never easy to do that because, you know, his first year obviously didn't get a lot of play in the beginning of the year, but started to see some play towards the end of his rookie year. Last year, he was in the conversation for the most improved player overall as a starter 10 games into the season. And then this year, he's also been on a roller coaster, starting, not starting. Basically, he lost his position due to injury. I mean, obviously, I think LaMelo was going to take over his spot anyway. But, you know, you've always talked about it. His best role on this team is a gunner off the bench, coming off the bench, being the player that can play on the ball, off the ball. And he definitely hit some clutch shots. And I think him and Rozier are statistically, going back to last season, the two best players in crunch time for Charlotte. I think Graham finished with 12 points, and all of those were off of made three-pointers. So, yeah, definitely embracing this role off the bench, and that's been a common theme for anyone on this team this season.
Yeah, Devontae, four threes last night and four assists. That's like just, it's perfect. It's like exactly the kind of like role you're expecting him to play. If you're looking at the four factors just for last night, if we're focusing on the, if we're scaling in from the macro and looking more on the just last night, Charlotte probably had one of their better games in terms of like taking care of the basketball. Just a seven, like if you're looking purely at the four, like, you know, we're going very basic and we're looking just at the four factors, which is always a valuable thing here to do. They were certainly not as efficient shooting the basketball as Sacramento from the field, but they got to the line more and they turned it over less, and they won the offensive rebound rate battle too. But yeah, it's the 7% turnover rate. That's gotta be one of their lowest numbers from this season. Only 8 turnovers total, including just, zero from LaMelo Ball, zero turnovers in 25 and a half minutes last night. I did think it was cool last night, and I thought it spoke to what Richie, what you, Lee, and myself, what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, where late games, the clutch offense, I mean, they're scoring 1.5 points per possession in clutch minutes, which is a lot of that is shooting luck. We all know that, like, you know, no doubt. They're not a 55% three-point shooting team. And they just happen to be in this one sort of like assortment of games and times and situations. But they have a good after timeout drawing coach in James Borrego that is great at drawing ATOs and really has an offense that is balanced and does a good job with misdirection and decoys and sort of like moving the pieces around and highlighting the best parts of his talent, which is part of the San Antonio nature of his coaching background. But also, like, you know, there are no all-star guards on this roster right now. I mean, LaMelo projects to be a multi-time all-star probably sooner rather than later, but it's not even there yet. But all these guys are really good. And I thought, even if you want to like lump Hayward into this mixture, just like all of the ball handlers for Charlotte last night, like took turns where for a couple minutes it was Malik Monk dominating. Then it was Devontae Graham got hot. Then it was Gordon Hayward that had a moment. Then LaMelo at the start of the fourth quarter. Then Rozier hit some big threes late in the game. And Terry, by the way, 8 of 8 from the line. Hayward 5 of 5. And so just like, it's nuts because they have guys that probably can't like quite start to finish, just like lord over every possession, you know, the way that like the best players in the world do, the way LeBron does, the way Jokic does. But they do have these guys that can just like for stretches of time, they're good players, but then they can really just get hot and they're fearless. And I don't know, it's still, the backcourt still is like a little crowded. Like, it's weird to see, you know, Rozier played almost 34 minutes, but then you've got LaMelo at 25, Devontae 21, Malik only 14, Cody Martin played almost 16. Like the Cody Martin minutes are interesting, yeah. But he played well last night, but it just like, and I think some of that is situational, and we sort of talked about, this is not a great perimeter defensive team. And so Cody is at least some effort perhaps to try and bolster that. But I would like to see, I know Malik didn't have an amazing offensive game last night shooting the ball, but I did think his playmaking was big. 4 assists, 2 steals was really helpful from Malik on a night where he is not shooting that well for even Monk to contribute some.
You're talking about the ball handlers, the multiple playmakers, and I don't know if versatile is the right word, but there are definitely players that can play on and off the ball. And one of the biggest players that the Hornets went to a lot in that game, especially with the way that they were not converting from deep, especially early on, it just feels like all the shots were not falling for him. But the one player that they did go to a lot was Gordon Hayward. When things aren't working well with this team, they have that guy to lean on. And I guess versatile is the right word. I think a lot of people hear the word versatile, they think of like these long, rangy 6'7" guys that can jump out of the gym, can guard 4 positions and stuff like that. But in terms of offensive profile, Gordon Hayward is as versatile as you can get. They used him a ton as a screener last night. You noted it on Twitter. I noted it on Twitter as well. You know, as someone that works in the post, someone that works off of the screens, that is something that they can turn to when things aren't falling. They like to use it as a horn set, pistol set, get that smaller guy on his back. And he was able to do just that against Halliburton a couple times, Corey Joseph 1 or 2 times. I even asked him about this after the game, Brian, and here's what he had to say.
Yeah, just they have some smaller guards, so trying to take advantage of that matchup, really with just seals. I think if you can seal first in the post and try to get an easy layup, that's the best offense in the post, as opposed to trying to make a move or back somebody down. Gives them time to bump or switch or bring the double or whatever. So just something where we're screening below and trying to get something easy.
Yeah, so Hayward was 5 of 7 at the rim versus Sacramento, and maybe outside of that poster dunk on Fox, Brian, I would have to assume maybe the other 4 makes were in the half court in those types of situations where he's sealing those, you know, smaller guards on his back. Another small thing for this player that should not go unnoticed, and it's just another way Charlotte can use him in this offense.
The according to Synergy, Gordon Hayward shooting 61% on post ups this season, 1.35 points per possession. Wow. Not a lot of those post up possessions, but those are obviously perhaps a little bit. I mean, he's certainly not that good of an isolation post score, but those are really good on about 25 possessions. Those are pretty good numbers for Hayward. We've seen it this season. Early in the year, they went to the pick and roll where LaMelo's handling. Gordon Hayward comes up. This is the Atlanta game in the season. Hayward comes up, sets the screen. Look, you don't want to switch Trae Young on to Gordon Hayward. So because of that, you're going to show, well, then that's going to create some space, right? And then we can attack that space. If you do switch, well, then we're going to go after whatever that matchup is. And you saw them do that last night. And so you described a couple of the ways they've gone to it, but they've also used, you saw it again last night, and they've done this a dozen or so times this season, at least, if not more. We talked about this with Div a couple weeks ago, that like gut pin down. It was the first play of the third quarter last night where Hayward goes down. He screens for, sets a down screen for LaMelo. And that action is not designed to get LaMelo, you know, curling off a down screen for a jumper. Like Hayward's setting it flat too. It's literally so I can go down, screen and seal. And then I even thought he had a nice counter in a play that I clipped and put on Twitter last night, where it was the horn set where he screened in Sacramento, which was switching a lot of stuff last night. It was like they couldn't decide whether they wanted to switch or not. And he just ended up slipping back door to the hoop for an alley-oop layup. And you're like, yeah, like that speaks to his versatility. He's a really smart offensive player. Like there really isn't anything offensively he can't do. He's a pull-up shooter from every level. He's a catch and shoot guy. He can post. He can handle, he can pass. Like all of these situations where he has the ball in the half court, he can pass or shoot out of. And he can be a matchup beater. And so I thought as Charlotte was really against a switching defense, was really like leaning on matchups more last night than they do probably like on most games. And it's no surprise that Hayward was heavily featured in that type of role and in those packages.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, the only other notes that I have from this game that I thought were somewhat noteworthy, PJ Washington wasn't necessarily totally involved in this game in terms of just like putting up the numbers. I don't think he played a lot of minutes in this game. But one thing that I did notice from him a couple times, he made a couple of big-to-big passes out of the post. And again, that's something that's always been within his game. You can feed him down in the post, and it does draw attention from opponents. And Miles Bridges and Cody Zeller at one point, I don't think Cody Zeller converted, maybe got fouled, but yeah, Miles Bridges a couple times cut to the basket, and PJ finds the cutting Miles Bridges right there, and obviously the athleticism kind of takes over. And then speaking of Miles, again, you mentioned this earlier as we were talking about the Sacramento game in terms of being in terms of making a weak side block or whatever. There was a play in the second quarter where I thought there was no chance that Miles was going to make this block. And it was almost like he was on the opposite block and the ball was obviously heading towards the hoop. And he recovers to make this block on the backside that I just did not think he was going to make. So those are the other two things I just wanted to mention. Good passing from PJ Washington and obviously Miles Bridges with his athleticism being able to kind of cover up for some of the mistakes that we have on the defensive side of the court.
Yeah, PJ was awesome last, despite the foul trouble. Like he only got to play 26 minutes. Still had hit a couple threes, had five assists, only one turnover. We talk a lot about both the short roll passing from PJ and Miles. You saw that again with PJ. It was empty side ball screen. He caught a pass on a short roll. Then he flipped it over to Zeller, who got fouled. And as we discussed earlier in the podcast, those free throws, that was a big source of offense and the big reason why Charlotte won this game last night. And yeah, PJ can just do basically everything. Or as like a very good role player, I guess is what I should say. I mean, he in terms of his own shot creation, he lacks there, but he can do a lot of other stuff. It's why I love him as a compliment to LaMelo. It's why I was willing to ride with the struggles from early in the season. And I think he's played really well the last couple of games, going back to before the All-Star break too. Maybe it's easy to say the last Sacramento game when he went off for 42, but I just think he's had some nice, not just flashes, like he's putting together these full games for Charlotte. And he's a versatile offensive player. And obviously those lineups with him at five are huge for Charlotte. You know, they need minutes with him playing some center for them basically every game. So PJ's talented. He can do a lot of stuff with the basketball, and maybe he's just sort of scratching the surface with some of this stuff. And I am very excited to see like how he and LaMelo can sort of like grow and work. And I think that has a chance to be a very like fruitful partnership between those two guys going forward.
He's definitely showing signs of life in the past, like you said, three or four games for PJ. And whether it's the three-point shooting, whether it's the fact that he's able to dribble the ball up the court and make a behind-the-back dribble and do everything so seamlessly, it's something that we were expecting out of him to begin the season. And it's funny, Borrego kind of hinted at it in one of his recent media availabilities that PJ now has committed himself to the weight room and stuff like that, almost hinting, hey, maybe he was a little bit out of shape coming into the season. So that could be a reason why as to, you know, some of his early season struggles. So, Brian, I think this win against the Kings, like you said, it was not a pretty one, but it was important for a variety of reasons. Mainly, if the Hornets want to be in a top six spot in the East, they're going to have to win games like this and games that they're supposed to. You know, on paper, they are a better team than Sacramento. But also, the Hornets have quite a schedule coming up. They have a back-to-back against the Nuggets and the Lakers on Wednesday, Thursday. Then they go play the Clippers, the Spurs, and then obviously the Rockets not doing so well. But with any West Coast trip, I think it's always difficult, you know, obviously playing in different time zones and playing both LA teams on, you know, not consecutive nights, but in back-to-back games, even if they aren't playing their best basketball right now, it's tough. So those are five games that they're getting ready to play. What would you say is a success for this team of those five teams that we just mentioned? How many games do you think that they should get? Because to me, I think if they can get two wins, and, you know, I'm not saying that's what I'm expecting, but if they can get two wins, maybe beat the Rockets, who haven't won in a long, long time, and then maybe steal one from Denver or San Antonio and call it a day, I think coming out of this 22-21 out of the West Coast trip, I'd call that a victory.
I would too. I mean, like, I kind of wish they had one more game on the West Coast swing just so I could cop out and say, like, oh, if they go 500, it's a win, right? You know, which they just did on the last six game Western Conference swing that they just went through before the All-Star break. I mean, Jokic is going to be a crisis matchup for them in moments when Cody Zeller isn't on the court. And like the Murray's going to be a tough matchup too. You know, I guess Anthony Davis is still out for the Lakers, right? So like maybe you're getting the LA at a slightly good time, but no, I mean, like I think they should win Houston. San Antonio is a coin flip. And then the two LA teams, although the Clippers did not look good Sunday night against the Pelicans with Zion playing very well. I would say, yeah, best case scenario, 3-2. Yeah. Best scenario, that's like, you know, there's like a semi-decent chance of happening. Yeah, probably 2-3, which is why the win over Sacramento and in Charlotte was so big for them too. If it can kind of get baked into that cake, yes. Right? Yeah. Gives them a little bit more cushion before they head out west.
Yeah, and I was watching the Knicks and the Nets game last night just because obviously the Knicks and the Hornets are kind of right neck and neck in the Eastern Conference. And for Hornets fans, obviously you guys are probably happy to hear that the Nets beat the Knicks the other night. And it was kind of a controversial ending. I don't know if you saw the Julius Randle travel no call where he went up for a three-pointer and it was Kyrie that knocked the ball loose in his hands. But it was weird because like it didn't look like he lost possession by any means, Brian. So it looked like an up and down. But because Kyrie knocked it, I don't know exactly the letter of the law there, but it definitely was controversial. And Julius Randle was like not throwing chairs, but he was definitely frustrated. But good news, Hornets are up, yeah, I think, a game on them.
Yeah, no surprise, Scott Foster doing some questionable stuff while officiating a basketball game.
You are right, Brian. Scott Foster definitely finds himself in some kind of controversy with a lot of these calls. And it's funny, I just looked up the last two-minute report, and the call was correct. So he was correct, I guess, because the ball, even though it was touched, it was not dislodged or loose. So let's go ahead and get to the Twitter questions here to wrap up the episode. The first question, this one will probably be pretty brief. Any word on Richards or Carey and if they will start to get any minutes? James Borrego said recently that he hasn't ruled them out by any means for the future, but he also said that they aren't in the rotation at the moment. I think to keep players fresh and ready, they may be used in future games, but I think outside of an injury, I really only see spot minutes for them here and there. Do you see a need to play these two at all? And I know this next question that we're going to kind of get into about PJ at the five probably will correlate with this, but do you see any need to play Richards or Carey at this point?
You know, only from if you think it'll help, you know, their development. It's good that they both went down there and got some game action under their belt. But no, I don't think there's any need. And it both, I mean, like, I am hoping to, once the college basketball season is over, do like a bigger dive on what went down in the G League bubble, including with the, specifically with the Swarm and with the G League Ignite. It looked like Grant Riller put up some nice numbers down there and shot 46% on threes, which is honestly what I care about more than either of these two centers. I'm a little intrigued about Vernon Carey Jr., though I don't think he offers, even as like a big man, because he is not like a rim protector and like a real force at the rim. Though he's big and tall. He can do some of that, but like, I even think his sort of like archetype as a big man isn't even exactly what this roster needs all that much, though. Perhaps like, it could be beneficial for them down the line. But as far as like this season goes, I don't really see either of these guys helping out all that much. Richards can block a shot, but I just don't think he's certainly ready to play like NBA level defense at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. Neither of these guys are ready, especially considering where the Hornets are right now. And in the moment, they're in sixth place in the East. If they happen to be like in ninth or 10th, I think the conversation would definitely shift. And speaking of centers, PJ Washington, to me, is basically our backup center. The next question that comes in is talking just about that. According to Basketball Reference, PJ Washington has played 53% of his time at power forward and 47% of his time at center. What do you guys think about that split? And would you like to see it change in either direction next season? Well, clearly PJ is playing some center. I think a lot of times out of necessity in terms of just the way that our depth is. We have depth, but again, like we just mentioned, two of those players just aren't ready for the NBA level at this point. I do think it's working with him at the five, but I also think BG, I would like to see that number go down next year. And I think if we do get more competent centers, I think that it would go down. JB probably thinks that PJ gives the Hornets the best shot when they play him at five. But, you know, long stretches with the five with Biz just haven't been working. And the rookies, like we mentioned on the previous question, I think maybe kind of find a happy medium between what he played his rookie season and what he played this year. So maybe instead of playing 47% of his time at the center position, maybe get it closer to a third, you know, 33% of his time. But again, this all goes back to depth. If they have depth at the center position and they draft a good center, or they trade for a center, or they get a center in free agency, PJ's not forced to play the five, even though it is beneficial at times.
Yeah, my hopes about them, considering where their draft range is going to be about getting level of center, are pretty low too, though. Like, we'll see. I need to check out Gruba and some of these other international prospects a little bit more. But yeah, the PJ at the five, those lineups have killed offensively all season. According to Cleaning the Glass, over 119 points per 100 possessions. They get a lot of fouls, no mid-range shots, everything at the rim, everything a three-pointer. They're really, really good. They're not that great defensively. No real surprise. Charlotte doesn't really have any good defensive lineups. These are perhaps some of their better defensive lineups, but that could be noisy. This is only like 940 possessions to look at. I like with PJ that he offers this level of positional versatility where he can float between the four and the five. It's one of the things that I like about him. And if anything, this season, and we saw it last year too, for sure, but some of those moments were with Marvin, and it was sort of hard to tell like who's the four, who's the five. And maybe you even get some of that with Marvin was certainly like the four round one. He was one of the outside perimeter shooters, and PJ would be the interior guy. And maybe you have a similar sort of like setup with PJ and Miles this season. I think the lines are a little more blurry because Bridges is more of a force from different areas of the court, and it's not the same catch and shoot bomber that Marvin was. I think the range you mentioned, I'd like to have it be like a change up for this team. When you want to juice up the offense at the end of a half or the end of a quarter, or, you know, just a certain, it's a matchup thing or whatever. I want PJ to have some minutes at center because he's really good. And I think you can really take some of his skill set and give you an advantage there. And there's a lot of 2 years worth of data that says when he plays center, Charlotte's a good offensive team.
Right.
But yeah, maybe not have it be something that he does half the time and just sort of like lighten the load a little bit on a guy that's, you know, 6'7", 6'8", whatever. Mm-hmm. But I still, I want it to be a part of his arsenal, in the team's arsenal, because I think he can obviously do a lot of damage from that standpoint too.
Yeah, even though he's 6'7", he has the power to body some of the bigger centers that are bigger than him. But then he offers that versatility with his ball handling and with his playmaking as well. That's all developing. And I think Borrego does see an advantage in playing him at the five. Probably we shouldn't be seeing the 47%, though. But it should come back down, I would assume, next season.
He's shooting 58% on basket rolls this season. And when you can have him as the five, it allows you to really get good spacing on those looks. But he does some of that stuff at the four too, with one of the guys in the dunker spot. And that's where we can see some of his passing come online too. But those five, when he plays center, allows you more easily, obviously, to get to those pick and roll looks, which is nice.
I just realized all these questions deal with the center position. So the next question, when are we replacing Biz? Well, I mean, here's the thing. Obviously, he's been pretty poor this season. I also think he's become an easy target for the blame, in the sense that, yes, he's not been great. He drops a lot of passes. He fumbles a lot of balls. And even when he, you know, catches it somewhat cleanly, it seems like the defenders are always there to block it because he didn't catch it clean enough. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's ever the one reason why the Hornets lose. So I think, yes, he's not been great, but I don't think he's the one that you're going to point to, you know, night in and night out as the reason why he's the downfall. We do need an upgrade at this position. I think achieving that right now is harder than one would think. So to answer the question, I just think you obviously wait it out to the end of the year, let the contract run out. Right, Brian? I think that's when the replacement occurs.
Yes, I think the 1 year. I think that is 100% how it's going to work. Yeah. The deal they used to bring back Biz, a little over the vet minimum. And he's going to be here at like the fringes of Charlotte's rotation, unless they add someone at the deadline. Right. And then if that happens, then he'll be replaced. Right. He'll if they add another big guy while keeping Cody Zeller, Biz would go a rung down the ladder and would very rarely play after that. Short of that happening. And I think there's a non-zero chance of that, but short of that happening, he's going to be like the 10th man or whatever. And you know what I mean? I just don't think you can necessarily count on Carey or Richards coming on. I do think, like, assuming Charlotte makes the playoffs, of the 48 minutes that unless foul trouble gets in the way, that 48 of those minutes will come with Cody Zeller or PJ Washington as the five. Right. So I think some of this will be like some stuff will just get trimmed as the games start to sort of like matter a little bit more, provided the postseason is in their future and provided that they don't make an addition at center. And then, the offseason will provide them an opportunity to upgrade or figure out what they want to do with Cody Zeller if he's still around. We talked with Div. Zeller is a really interesting stopgap for Charlotte, but I don't envision sort of Biz being that, unless they really just think they can't go forward without the Bismack Biyombo chemistry add to the locker room. But no, I would say there are a few more months left on this before it's tabled.
I don't think we necessarily should shoot that down, the veteran presence. I mean, I do think there's some value in that.
Yeah, there has to be. Yeah. There has to be. Yeah. 100%. There is.
All right. Last question involving a trade, but also a big man. Again, the center position is on everyone's mind right now. What do you think of a trade that involves Jackson Hayes on the New Orleans Pelicans? I'm not exactly sure how he's viewed within the organization, because I know earlier in the season he received several DNPs quite often. Mm-hmm. I think the most obvious strength, even coming out of college, has been how athletically gifted this guy is. He's obviously very young and can grow with the youngsters on this team. His style in the pick and roll would, I think, pair well with someone like LaMelo. He can get up. He can be a vertical lob threat. Defensively, I think maybe this is where maybe he's still a work in progress. He's able to block shots on the back end and can make up for those mistakes. But overall, I think maybe defending out in space is something that he needs to work on. And so, I think I like this idea a lot. A young guy with a salary of around $5 million, or look that up just now, which actually happens to be in the range of Malik Monk. I don't know if that's something that you would do straight up for, or if picks would have to be included, or, you know, one way or the other. But at least with Hayes and his salary, you're at least getting two more years, you know, within the system. So this is the type of trade that I think the Hornets should at least kind of be entertaining. I've always said this. I said it with Tom Haberstroh. The hardest thing about making a trade with this Hornets team is, like, if you're going for a big name player, and I put that in quotes, I'm not talking about Jackson Hayes, but just a big name player, you're going to have to include some salary. The top three salary guys on our team are all contributors. And then it feels like there's like a big gap in salary, and it's a lot of younger players. So if you're going after a younger player like Jackson Hayes, you've also got to be willing to give up a younger player. Thoughts on Hayes, Brian?
I like Hayes as a young prospect. I liked him coming out of Texas. He is a freak athlete for the center position, right? Like, much in the way when DeAndre Jordan first came in the league, it was like, whoa, how can someone this big sort of be moving like this? Like, really explosive vertical athlete, in my opinion. Maybe not quite to like the DJ vertical lever. Like, maybe he's a little bit more of a glider, but I sort of think he's pretty explosive vertically and can really just like move and run, just like a fluid athlete for a guy that size. And you can maybe see some of his football background come out in some of that. I thought when he was coming out of Texas, he had the chance to be a pretty good drop, like middle ground center. Like, thought he had enough spatial awareness and coordination to be the guy that could sort of like drop and be good against the driving point guard, while also sort of like being the guy that's like playing the middle ground and in two spots at one time. So guarding the ball handler and also sort of like trying to contest or bother any potential, you know, lob pass that would be going to the screener and the roll man. I need to watch more New Orleans, and even when I mean, you can also watch the Pelicans play and just not see him,
right?
Hayes all that much. He's been sort of in and out of the rotation, and up until a couple, I mean, for chunks of the season, it's been, you know, they've been playing Steven Adams, who they have signed for at least two seasons beyond this
and
year.
Who else have they been playing?
And we've seen Willie Aaron Gomez. I mean, I've seen a fair amount of the Pelicans simply because I watched Zion. So it's sort of hard to gauge the Pelicans are like a mystery box to begin with. Like, what does this team want to do this season? Mm-hmm. What do they want to do going forward around Zion, which is really the most important question. And based off of that, you know, how committed are they to some of their young guys versus trying to win now? You know, it's hard to figure, like, will, you know, Nikhil Alexander Walker, he's in and out of the rotation. His play is inconsistent. I think they should be playing Kyra Lewis Jr. more. I mean, I would love him as a prospect.
Yeah.
I think like he has not been very good so far this season. You know, it's hard to sort of be like a good winning player as a rookie point guard, but like they got to play him more, period. I think he's the future. You drafted this point guard. You use a top 10 pick on this guy. Like, you got to play this dude. And so it's just hard to gauge, you know, like, do they see Jackson Hayes as like the long-term center next to Zion? Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of reasons to question that fit. They've played 200 minutes together so far this season, which is not much. They probably played very little together last season. Pelicans are minus 20 in those minutes. I don't read too much into those minutes either. If I were the Pelicans, I would be wanting to play those guys more down the stretch, especially if I'm like not going to make the playoffs, which they're really teetering on the fence of the play-in game scenario. So I don't even know if a guy like Hayes is available. He's not in that like prospect in distress category of like a Mo Bamba in Orlando or something like that. So yeah, I like Hayes as a player, freak athlete. I think he could become an average defensive center and give you a vertical threat offensively. You know, the one thing I would say is the set of skills that he does provide, while maybe the athleticism is a little more special, is something that you can probably find. Again, not the athleticism, just like the discrete set of skills that Jackson Hayes offers.
Yeah.
Is maybe something that you could find for less, you know what I mean, than a guy that you would be trading for and then needing to sign to a new contract eventually, or what, like, maybe you can find those guys for cheaper value. But I like Hayes as a prospect, and I mean, I'm certainly interested in him as a guy that could, you know, be a finisher in the middle of the court, but I just need to see more with him. And hopefully the Pelicans will play him more down the stretch here.
Well, it sounds like this question asker wants to see more of him in a Hornets uniform. So
I get it.
It's funny. You mentioned him being someone that can kind of play that in-between drop coverage. I almost wonder if that's something that the Hornets should do at points, maybe to kind of limit some of their corner threes. It feels like, obviously, Cody, more so than any of the other centers on our team, maybe has the ability to go high on pick and roll coverage. But
yeah,
I just wonder sometimes if maybe drop coverage could limit some of that stuff on the corner threes. Who knows? If you had to put money on it, Brian, obviously we're, I don't know how many days out here, maybe a week out. Do you think the Hornets make a trade or no?
I don't think they're going to make a trade. I don't think they're going to. There's a lot of good vibes with this team right now. And maybe you can, like, if you're really like trying to argue over like fixing the backup center minutes, I get that. Like, I mean, I do think it's an area of concern. But if that's the case, then you're boxing yourself into the kind of deals you can make and how, you know, what are you willing to do to facilitate that? Richie, you mentioned some of the constraints that they have in terms of salaries for trade chips.
Yeah.
But they have a little bit of space and they have a need. So I don't know, like, you know, 40% chance they, or maybe 30% chance they do something, you know what I mean? And 70% that they don't, they sit pat. And just try to ride this thing out. I mean, there was a report in The Athletic by Sam Amick this week about the Hornets potentially shopping Devontae Graham. You know, I think, Richie, we did a pod a couple weeks ago with Lee where I think the three of us said across the board, like, no way that's happening. Maybe we'll need to sort of like reevaluate those numbers a little bit. I still don't think Devontae's going anywhere.
No.
And when I saw the report yesterday, or on Monday, I should say, my mind immediately went to like, well, who's floating this? Like, how does this information get leaked out? My guess is why, like, Charlotte's not offering that up, right? Like, why would Charlotte say like, well, we're not sure about, you know, whether we want to, you know, pay this guy beyond the current contract that he's on. You know, Charlotte wouldn't offer that money up. So where's that information coming from? That is probably, you know, probably a topic for a whole other conversation. But I don't think it's likely. And I just think Devontae's still too important to what this team's trying to do, even knowing there's definitely a logjam at that backcourt. The one guy that I would trade, as we discussed with Tom last week, is just certainly not going to be available. And I also understand why.
Yeah.
Because Terry Rozier is just too important to what this team's trying to do right now. And he's a big time shooter. So I recognize the value for him from a win now proposition. So I'm not strongly advocating for that. It's just like, if I were to move one of these guys, he's the one that I would be a little more interested in. That said, Charlotte's heading to an interesting offseason ahead with Devontae as a free agent, with Malik as a free agent, with Cody Zeller as a free agent, you know, Devontae and Malik as restricted free agents. So yeah, we'll see. What do you think?
Yeah, I might even be lower than you in terms of 30% something happening. I probably would limit it down to like 15%. I just don't mm-hmm. see it happening. And yeah. Again, maybe 15% is just too high in terms of how I feel about this. You kind of made a slight mention about this, you know, just making a trade and the good vibes of this team. Just because you trade for a player, like, that doesn't automatically improve your team. And you've got to worry about the chemistry, and you've got to worry about the locker room aspect as well. Trading Devontae Graham is, even though he's a free agent and you might not retain him next year, same thing with Monk, doesn't mean you're just going to go ahead and trade him so that you can get something back in return that's going to help you this year and in future years. So I think Devontae brings a whole lot more, and I think people think highly of him in the locker room. And yeah, to your point, that report that came out in The Athletic, who knows where it came from, but it very well could be something that the Hornets aren't even entertaining. It's probably, like you said, it's probably coming from someone outside of the Hornets there. And don't the Hornets have an open roster spot? So if worse comes to worse, they could sign somebody at the very least.
Let's bring Michael. I've been saying this since last offseason. Let's bring MKG back.
There you go.
Why? I mean, seriously, what? Like, that guy should be an NBA player. It's weird that he's not. I'm kind of surprised that Brooklyn didn't kick the can on him. He would check some boxes for Charlotte. Plus, he already has your, like, you know, has like already has the like cultural IP of having played for James Borrego for two seasons and been in the Hornets for a long time. I just like, I'm surprised that guy's not on a roster. He would make a lot of sense for Charlotte beyond just maybe the weirdness of him coming back. But like, hell, I would be interested in doing that. Especially because he could play some center for you.
Yeah, I'm a little bit lower on MKG than you are, but it's always kind of interesting to kind of envision how he would be with this team, because this team is definitely way different than in season past when MKG was on the team. Here's the thing, Brian. Nick Richards holds number 14 on this roster. So what's going to happen with that if they sign MKG? Oh gosh, that's going to
be a little Kentucky one-on-one matchup between Richards and MKG You could have, they get to pick teams. They get to pick PJ or Malik.
Yeah.
And then a little Kentucky 2-on-2 to decide who's going to wear 14.
The fact that we have that many Kentucky players.
I hope it would be MKG, but who knows, in this bizarre hypothetical.
All right, guys, before we wrap, I wanted to read an actual review that we got on Apple Podcast and just kind of let you guys know how much we appreciate the kind words on the pod. This says, the BuzzBeat crew does a fantastic job of driving casual but informed conversations about the Hornets and everything going on with the organization. There are fans who aren't afraid to give honest takes without making them ridiculous, and they even know enough about the NBA to talk about the game intelligently without going over your head. And the guests seem to be getting better every week. Keep up the good work. So, Brian, I think this is actually kind of what what we attempted to go for. You know, everything that's mentioned in this review, this is what we're trying to bring for you guys, the listeners on BuzzBeat. So we do appreciate that. Keep those coming. And if you guys could take your 30 seconds out of your day and go to Apple Podcast, and maybe we'll read one if we get one as good as this, we'll definitely give it a read on here. So for Brian, I'm Richie. We will see you guys next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.